It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A lot of bank stress and deals.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Bank of America is trying to shore up some capital. Citigroup is lending most of what it got out. Stress tests are crossing the pond, and British politicians are acting like a bunch of politicians. It's the Morning Open. And before we talk about the markets and where they are this morning, let's bring in Julie Nieman right now, analyst with Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. We're going to talk a little bit about the day's topic and their top economic stories. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
All right. Banks seem to be on the front burner again today. Let's talk about Bank of America reportedly selling more than $7 billion worth of shares in China Construction Bank to some Asian investors. And they're trying to raise that capital, bolster their bottom line, but it needs still, what, another $27 billion. How much of this, Julie, is the government saying raise that capital, and how much is it B of A talking and looking at its bottom line?
Well, they have to do a combination of things. Over a week ago, the government just basically laid hands on those 19 biggest banks and said, arise, you will not be allowed to fail. So Bank of America is doing it two ways. One, they will be having a stock offering. They're going to sell off more of the China Construction Bank. There's a lock on the rest of it right now, but in the fall, they'll get rid of the rest of it. So they're just going to keep plugging toward that almost $34 billion in capital shortfall here.
It's almost like a bankathon.
You've got it exactly.
Yeah.
Sell.
Citigroup today said it used most of it, almost every bit of that $45 billion of taxpayer money to make loans. Who are they lending to?
Well, unlike many banks who held their TARP cash in a death grip, Citi is actually lending new mortgages, cars, business suppliers, and, of course, they do a lot with state and local governments. But that $45 billion is finally achieving what the Obama administration wanted to begin with, lending.
They've had this money for so long. Why are we hearing about this right now?
All the banks basically were clutching their TARP money in a death trap simply because they felt that they were undercapitalized. Now that the stress test is out of the way, it's public as to what their shortfalls happen to be. They actually are free to lend again because they know what the consequences will be.
All right. Julie Nieman joining us from St. Louis this morning. Thank you, Julie.
You bet.
All right. Let's check the numbers right now. The Dow down about a point, pretty much flat for the markets right now. NASDAQ down about a third of a percent. S&P 500 down about 0.2% right now. Asian stocks were mixed today. The Nikkei lost about 1.5%. European markets are up slightly. The German DAX adding about 0.2%. We got word this morning that the European Union will do stress tests of their own on the entire banking system there. They'd like to have it underway by September. And British lawmakers have been a bit embarrassed in the last few days. A list of yearly expenses that members of both parties claimed for reimbursement was leaked to Britain's Daily Telegraph. You're probably not surprised to learn that it included receipts for some questionable items. Christopher Worth has more.
All those receipts add up to a spending spree worth tens of thousands of dollars for almost every member of parliament. It includes politicians who've written off groceries, refurnished their homes, and repaired tennis courts. Even dog food made it onto the list. Some allowances were also used to play the housing market. Taxpayers are unhappy to be footing the bill for outlandish expenses, not least in a recession. Over the weekend, Conservative opposition leader David Cameron tried to apologize for the allowance system.
This system that we had, that we used, that we operated, that we took part in, it was wrong, and we're sorry about that.
Cameron has hinted at resignations, and party leaders are calling for reform. Members of parliament are paid just under $100,000, much smaller than the $169,000 a U.S. senator makes. Writing off things like dog food was a way to bump up their own salaries, and members thought those receipts would never see the light of day. In London, this is Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report on Tuesday, May 12th, 2009 at marketplace.org. We're going to get an update on the two biggest drags on the nation's long-term budget today. Or to put it another way, a couple of enormously popular but increasingly expensive entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Every year at about this time, the trustees for Social Security and Medicare put the equivalent of an oil change sticker on the program's windshields. Last year, trustees said the Social Security Fund would start paying out more than it collects in 2017. They said the Medicare Trust Fund would start paying out more than it takes in within a year. Experts say today's report will show the situation is even worse. The recession means fewer people working and therefore fewer people paying into the trust funds. While that's unlikely to mean immediate benefit cuts for recipients, it will mean more stress on an already gigantic budget deficit, more than $1.8 trillion this year. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
The National Transportation Safety Board kicks off hearings today on the February plane crash outside Buffalo, New York. The crash killed 50 people. The NTSB looking into everything from weather to training and even how rested the pilots were on the day of the crash. Ashley Milne-Tight reports.
The NTSB will want to know whether the first officer on the plane was too tired to fly. She arrived on a red eye from the West Coast the same morning as the Buffalo flight. Mark Rosenkerr is acting chairman of the safety board.
Fatigue in general is something which has remained on our most wanted list for much too long, and we are hoping that we can bring a good deal of visibility to the issue if this is something involved here.
The NTSB will also want to know why the aircraft stalled despite an automatic warning the plane was too low. Bob Francis is an airline consultant with Farragut International. He says there's a standard procedure for reacting to that kind of alert.
Any pilot that's got the kind of training that they'd have, to me, it's almost inconceivable that when they got into a stall situation that they would pull back on the yoke.
The yoke being the plane's control column. He says the pilot should have pushed down instead. The NTSB says it will be several months before it publishes any conclusions about the cause of the crash. I'm Ashley Milne-Tight for Marketplace.
EADS, the owner of European plane maker Airbus, delivered a disappointing set of numbers this morning. Net profit for the first quarter was down 40%. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Airbus delivered 5% fewer aircraft in the first quarter. Prices were lower too, and that further depressed revenues. Penalties for late deliveries account for the rest of the damage to the bottom line. Even more worrying for Airbus is the future flow of work. In the first quarter, after cancellations, they took orders for a total of just 8 planes. Compare that with the 395 ordered in the same period last year. If it's any consolation, says David Buick of the BGC Group, Boeing isn't exactly flourishing either. He says both companies have been hit by the fall in air traffic, especially in business travel.
People sit at board tables and look at each other on a television screen rather than getting into a plane and spending, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 to go wherever they have to go.
EADS's share price, already down 60% since last year, fell further this morning. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The phrase American dream often brings to mind a house with a white picket fence, but it's not everyone's model. In the first part of our Marketplace special series, The Next American Dream, we take a look at co-housing. I spoke with one resident, Kathy Journay, who lives at a development in Massachusetts. She says the idea goes back decades.
It's kind of an intentional neighborhood. It is a place where people can live and they want to and expect to interact with their neighbors. You cluster the houses very close together. You reserve the cars to the edges of the community so that the inside of the development is all pedestrian friendly.
It sounds a lot like an apartment complex, but nobody's attached.
It could be, but again, in an apartment complex, most folks only know their neighbors in passing. conceptually, the idea behind it is you share the resources. Plus, we also have the common house. The common house has a kitchen big enough to cook for the entire neighborhood. We actually have common meals a couple nights a week. There's a kids' room, a yoga studio. We have a sewing room. We have a gym downstairs. And we also have a pool. So rather than the 34 residents building 34 pools or maybe 12 pools, there's only one pool. So you're not using as many resources. We don't have 34 lawnmowers. We're going to have two neighborhood riding lawnmowers, and that's all the lawnmowers are going to have.
Any problems with sharing?
Well, we're newly moved in. The first residents just moved in December, so there hasn't been any problems with sharing yet. If we do run into problems, we actually make decisions using a consensus model rather than, say, for example, voting. The first rule of co-housing is that you talk to each other if there's a problem. We don't have a lot of rules in the same way that a condo association has rules. In a condo association, often the rules are to take the place of talking to each other. In co-housing, we expect people to talk to each other as the first way to resolve conflicts and problems.
You ever see this concept catching on with mainstream America?
I think in this economy, I think that people are looking for ways to save money. And I think that this is one way that you could go ahead and do that. And I think that as people adapt and change to the new economy, I do think that you will see concepts like this begin to seep into middle America. Yes, I do.
Well, Kathy Jernay, good luck. And thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And hey, check out our Next American Dream section inside marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.